Thank you all for being here. Such a beautiful audience. I love to get to know the people that I'm talking to a little bit. So I'm going to ask some questions. And for the introverts in the room, yes, I'm going to ask you to raise your hand. Okay, I'm an introvert too. I get you. I'm sorry. Who here was investing during the Great Recession or was a real estate investor prior to 2007? Great. Love you. Who thinks that there could be another recession in real estate coming soon? Raise your hand. Okay, maybe. Soon could be a year, could be 10 years soon, right? Relative. Who's ever been wrong about something? Put both my hands up. today, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what I personally do, the foundational wealth strategies that I personally use, the philosophies that I've adopted and that I teach my clients about. I'm not going to tell you anything that I don't do, which means I'm not going to talk to you about stocks, bonds, and mutual funds because I have $0 of my money there. Deal? Sound good? Okay. Here we go. Now I got to start with some grim reality because we got to start with the problem before we talk about the solution. That's what the marketing people tell me. Let's start with this. Anybody know who said this? By failing to prepare, you're preparing to fail. Warren Buffett, I heard that. Ben Franklin, there we go. How about this one? Who can finish this phrase? Everyone has a plan until? You get punched in the mouth. Who said it? Mike Tyson. Financial planner, these are my bread and butter. You got a plan. You got to have a plan. But also, that plan has to stick when you get punched in the mouth, when something goes wrong. We have a recession. Somebody trashes your home. You know, the syndication is not paying you the residuals you thought you were going to get, and who knows when it's actually going to, you know, pay out, right? We all need a plan, but that plan has to flex and change. So let's talk, is it even possible to be financially stress-free? Here's some results from a survey. Now, I know y'all aren't the typical Americans, but you're probably like most Americans, feeling some of this. So 2022, they did the Stress in America survey for every year. But in 2022, they found that 87% of Americans were stressed about money, up from 59% the year before. And 65% responded they were stressed specifically, due to the rising inflation, but 65% in general. That's the highest recorded in more than 6 years. And if you go back 6 years previous to 2022, that would have been 2016. We all know what was happening in 2016 to make people stressed about money, but we're stressed again. So we don't need those stats, though. We experience this every day, right? I shop at Kroger, too, right? Like, I see what's happening. And if it's not us, it's our neighbors who have lost jobs, lost homes, stopped buying eggs, had their kids or their parents have to move in with you or back in with you or had to delay. Sorry. That was a big election year. I think, right? Yes. Yeah. or maybe, you know, large unexpected expenses make real estate goals have to be delayed for who knows how long, right? Medical bills are the number one cause of bankruptcy. It's a big deal. So we look around, we see more and more people struggling to make ends meet, let alone build security, build wealth, achieve financial goals. We had a pandemic. I like to call this the epidemic. Are we better off than our grandparents and our great-grandparents were financially? And why are we better or worse than they were? That's what we're going to talk about a little bit today. Sound good?
Yes.
Okay. The number one thing I want you to know is you're not alone. If you're struggling, if you're paycheck to paycheck, or you thought you'd get 10% and you're only getting 6% on your returns, whatever it might be, if that's struggling to you, you're not alone. Lots of people are dealing with this. I talk to countless people every week, and I hear their struggles. And I know the last person I talked to had a similar struggle. The next person I talk to is going to have a similar struggle. The struggle's real, and we're all facing it. But we're not facing it alone. We don't have to face it alone, and there are ways to improve. So, I'm here to tell you can be financially stress-free. And I'm going to share some time-tested wisdom about achieving financial peace of mind. Kind of the stress turning into peace of mind. I'm a big peace of mind. That's like the main thing I want for my clients. Not some big rate of return. Maybe they get that, that's great. But if they don't have peace of mind, what good is a good rate of return? So I'm going to talk about some money sense that are, if you're a boomer, I'd be talking about your parents, the greatest generation, and the generation before them, how they did money, what they did with their money, and what they learned from their parents and their parents, the time-tested wisdom that a lot of people have forgotten these days. A way to set it and forget it, you don't have to keep, you know, worrying about what's happening, checking in on the balance every day, you know, things like that. And some simple but powerful wisdom that's just been lost and replaced by some clever marketing schemes that started in the 1980s. Okay, not going to talk to you about any of those today, or unless they're, I'm saying how they're wrong. So here we go. Here's what the attorneys want me to put in. I'm not going to be giving any tax advice or legal advice. I'm not qualified to do that. I'm not giving anybody any individual advice. I'm telling you my story. We're talking like we're friends, sharing you what I've learned, helping you think through what's going to fit for you, what's not. And I'm going to invite you after this to have more individual conversations with me in the weeks and months to come, whenever you're ready, so we can start to individualize this. One of the things I love and hate about these conferences is that there's a lot of information. Not all of it's going to apply to you. And what I love to do as a certified financial planner is help you figure out what applies to you. And in what order are you going to implement them? What's actually going to help you start moving toward your goals? Those kind of things. So there is a place for that. I love doing that. That's not what we're doing today. Deal? Okay. And I'm going to use some trademarks that I'm allowed to use, but I'm not representing the people that made those trademarks. Here we go. This is a little bit about me. I'm all these things. A wife and a mom. That's my little guy. He's a kindergartner now. Proud of him. I'm a big Reds fan. Go to so many Reds games. An Enneagram, I'm a 5. That means I love to hoard information. Libraries are my favorite places. I am an introvert, person of faith, an entrepreneur. This is my second business. We built and sold our first business. I do invest in real estate, and I'm a certified financial planner. I already told you what I'm going to share is what I personally do. If you do everything that I'm already doing, I'm going to be really surprised because I've never met anybody that does what I do exactly, except for my husband because we do it together, and a few people that taught it to me. But this is, you know, unless I met my great-grandparents, because my dad was actually in the greatest generation. He was born in 1928. He was in his 50s when I was born. And I was so privileged to be raised by him, to learn his philosophies, but he still didn't do everything that he said he wanted to do. I wanted to meet his parents and his grandparents. That would have been where these stories would have come from. Okay. Ooh, a warning. There's going to be this little voice in some of your heads, maybe 99% of your heads, that say, I know this already. It's going to sound like this. I know this already. And this is going to seem so simple, so basic. You're gonna be like, I know this already. I know that this is what what smart people do with their money. This is how you build wealth. What I want you to ask when you hear that little voice, I know this already, I want you to ask them back, yes, but are you doing it? Or, but who else needs to hear this? Okay? So if you know this stuff already, I want you to think, who do you know in your life that needs to hear it? Or how do you need to get better at doing these things? Because I'm still trying to improve and get better at these things. And that growth mindset I want you to bring into the conversation today. Okay? Sound good? Here we go. Without further ado. Oh, great. I'm 10 minutes in. Perfect. We're going to go scubaing. A little deep here. I'm not actually a scuba person except with information. So here we go. Saving versus investing. Two different things. Even in my CFP textbooks, it referred to investing as saving. But let's back up a place. There's only 5 places your money can go. And I put them into an acronym. If you're trying to think, where the next dollar that I earn, that next dollar of rent, the dollar from my W-2 that I want to put into real estate, where does it go? It can only go one of these 5 places. Savings, taxes and go to the Internal Revenue Service. It can go into investing, right, into real estate. It can go to pay off debts, liabilities, or it can go to your lifestyle, everything else, right? The groceries, your own personal rent, buying clothes, all. That's it. Those five places are the only places money can go. It's that simple. And you just have to think, well, where do I want this money to go? And which one of these is a foundational concept that would bring more peace of mind if I had more of it in my life? Now, hopefully you're not saying taxes as the answer to that. That's not what we want more of. We want to reduce that one. Maybe other people's money. You might want some more of that, but that's not how you build foundations. Which one of these do you build a foundation of wealth on? Which one of these is foundational wealth? Savings. Because if you don't have savings, you can't actually invest. You save first, and then you take that money and you invest it, right? And then to help it grow. But if you haven't saved it first, you haven't set it aside first, you've got no money to invest, right? So you can move things around between these buckets, but the one that's foundational that then props up everything else, helps you do everything else better, is savings. You can save on your tax, save, like send less money to the Internal Revenue Service if you built savings. Because guess what? Every accountant's going to be like, you could do the, you know, add more to your 401k or IRA. You could do a major expense. You could buy a truck. You could do all these things. But if you don't have savings, you're going to be able to do those things in the next 2 months to save on your taxes, right? Saving is the foundation to help with all these. You can pay off your debts faster if you save first, right? All those kind of things. You've all heard this, save first. But are we doing it? And are we treating it as its proper respect? Especially because we've been in this really low interest rate environment for so long, savings accounts have sucked. But I'm here to tell you that's not the only way to save. So we'll come back to that. Okay, so to save is to place money you can't afford to lose in a vehicle that is safe and has guaranteed growth. And then investing is where you put money at risk, that you know it might grow, but it's not guaranteed to grow, and you could, in fact, lose it all. Now, investing, some people refer to a little bit like gambling. I don't think the two are synonymous. Gambling is like way more risky than investing. But if you were to talk to a gambler and ask them, what's the number one rule of gambling? What do you think they'd say? Don't gamble more than afford more than you can afford to lose, which means you never go all in. Right? You have to keep some out, so then even if you lose everything on that one gamble, you still got money to restart. That's a big difference between saving and investing, right? You can invest and lose everything, and if you still have savings, you can restart again. But if you've invested everything and you don't have any savings, you're starting from maybe less than zero. Okay? So very big difference. That's a very big philosophy difference. People that mix the two have a really hard time figuring out how to get wealthy and stay wealthy for the long term. Okay, number two. This builds on top of number one. Most people build their financial lives like this. Very little in safe and liquid cash reserves. A little bit more in relatively safe and liquid capital for medium-term needs. I'd put real estate in that yellow part. And then the red is money you can afford to lose or can wait 20 plus years for it to recover. Yes, we've had stock market downturns that have taken 20 years to even get back to where they were, right? So most people build like this, and they've got all their money in the red in 401ks, IRAs, brokerage accounts, and they have very little in savings. You go to the average American, if they needed $400 to go replace the tires on their car, they're using a credit card to do that. They don't have the savings to do it. And yet they might have $100,000 in their 401k, right? This is how most of us build. Well, what our grandparents, great-grandparents would have built is like this. Foundation of safe and liquid cash reserves. And then relatively safe on top of that, right? Their real estate. And then, sure, invest a little. Like, go gung-ho with the brokerage account or with the 401k or the IRA. You can afford to take more risk now because you've got that foundation. So I'm not anti-anything. I'm pro, do it all in the right mix, right? What's going to help you sleep well at night? So this comes from, I have to now give credit where credit's due and tell you a little story. There's this man I met, his name's Tim Austin. He lives just a little north of Detroit. And back in the early 1980s, he was tasked with going around to a bunch of the greatest generation who are now, you know, starting to get into retirement age and figure out how are they doing? What do they need? What have they been doing with their money? What set them up for success or not success? And he interviewed a ton of them. And this is what they had built right here. And then he looked around at what all the people he knew in their 20s were building, and they were building over there. And he's like, there has to be something to this. Now, fast forward, 2007, Tim had $1 million in the screen. He had $1 million safe and liquid when the Great Recession hit. Guess what he did? He went and bought a whole bunch of real estate, bunch of foreclosures, along with his brother. And Tim was just the money. The brother was the one doing all the work. And then a couple years later, after having rents, you know, they bought these foreclosures, they turned them into rentals because no one was going to buy them. No one could get bank financing, right? So he turned them into rentals. They collected all these rents, and then his brother bought him out of the business, I think in 2018, okay? So 10 years or so. Collected all those rents for 10 years. His brother had to pay him $3 million to get him out of the business. That's what $1 million of safe and liquid cash reserves can do when you get one of these tails that happen, one of these big, you know, once in a decade, once in every 20-year kind of situations. So I often ask myself, would I rather have, you know, 10,000 or 50,000 in a syndication or whatever it is growing at 10, 12%? Or do I want to build up $1 million that I can turn into $3 million in a few short years with a bunch of rents in the meantime? Right? What am I preparing for? What am I keeping liquid cash reserves available for? And if I believe that some of those opportunities are going to be here in the next couple years, I'm going to get as much cash available as I can to take advantage of those. There, I can hear my Chicago accent out. I lived in Chicago for 17 years. Cash. Sorry. So financial stability, very important, gives opportunities that we wouldn't otherwise have. I once heard Mark Cuban on Shark Tank say that he keeps a ton of money available in cash for deals. Like, he's somebody I'd like to have more money like he has more money. I might not agree with everything he says, but there's something I'm going to listen to. I wonder if you looked at Warren Buffett's portfolio, how much he actually has in cash or other safe and liquid reserves. And yet you're not going to hear him talk about that, right? That's not what he gets paid the big bucks to tell people to do or buy or sell or whatever, right? Okay, let's keep going. So here's how our grandparents would have built that strong foundation. And this is literally what Tim heard from grandma and grandpa after grandma and grandpa after mostly grandmas at that, because, you know, the men had started passing away by then when he was talking to them in their 60s and 70s and 80s. Here's what they did, literally, 10-10-10 savings formula. Every dollar that comes in, they would set aside 10% for short-term needs. Christmas gifts, new tires for the cars, oil changes, holiday vacation, or like vacations in the summer, any kind of short term within a year needs, they'd set aside 10%. 10% for medium term, the next new car, right? The major home repair, the emergency fund, those kind of things they'd set aside 10% for. And then 10% for long term, the retirement, the major medical event, you know, those kind of things in the long term future. Maybe, depending on their age of their kids, they might have done medium term when they were 10 plus, but long term when they were under 10, right? Included those kind of things. Now, I don't know about you, but that adds up to 30% for me. Saving 30% of every dollar I get, that means I'm living on 70%. And if I tithe, that means I'm actually only living on 60%. Wow. That, who does that these days? Nobody, or very few people. Maybe some random people that have been able to live on, you know, very little money, right? But nobody's doing this. They're maybe saying, well, if I max out my 401k, that's my 10%. But they're not thinking about the medium term and the short term, right? And this is literally what they did. Now, the biggest thing I hear from people when I share this with them, and again, I'm doing this. I put 10, 10, 10, 10. I love this. I'm doing it. But it's hard. And here's what you do. You start with 1%. If you're saving zero right now, you're not going to miss 1%. Right? If you, Christmas is coming, Hanukkah is coming, whatever you celebrate, right? Kwanzaa. It's coming. And if you are making $100 tomorrow, you'll survive on 99 and you can save that dollar, right? If you're making $100,000 tomorrow, you can live on 999,000, you're not going to miss the 1,000, right? It's all relative. And why not start 1%? You're not going to miss it. It's so small. And you could say, well, I'm feeling strongly about short-term savings. I'm going to set that 1% to short-term. Or I'm feeling strongly, I need more medium-term, set that 1%. Like, start 1% somewhere, or 1, 1, and 1. You're not going to miss 3%. And then over time, you can build up. The next time I get a raise, I'm going to make it 2, 2, 2. Or I'm going to change it to 3, 1, 1, or 1, 1, 3, or whatever. And slowly, every quarter, every 6 months, once a year, you make that adjustment. And before you know it, you're at 10, 10, 10. You have no idea how you got there. And you got in those small little micro adjustments little by little over time. That's how wealth is built. It's not about the rate of return. It's about the rate of savings. We actually recently did a YouTube Live with a friend of ours who's also a CFP. And we compared. Like, if you're trying to save for 30 years or invest for 30 years and you increased your savings rate, like let's compare the two, savings rate by 1% or you increased your investment return by 1%, which gets better results? You can go find it on YouTube and find the answer or talk to me afterward or do the math yourself. It's a lot of fun to actually think about those things and say, well, have you ever done the math on that? And what kind of, if you start with 1% rate of return today, what percentage do you need in 30 years to equal the rate of return you can get if you're increasing your savings rate? And what if you do both? Even better. Okay. Now we get to life-saving liquidity. What is the power of savings? Having safe, liquid cash reserves. Can it really save lives? And what is liquidity anyway? It's money you can get your hands on with all these criteria. When you need it, for whatever you need, without begging or applying for it, with no penalties for accessing it and no restrictions, and without sustaining a loss. So that's safe, liquid cash reserves. Do you guys know where banks put this money? Not in real estate, no. Life insurance. Let's keep going. So how much cash should you stash? Some people say 3 to 6 months of household income. Okay, maybe if I've got that, then I don't need to keep doing the 10% for short term, or maybe the 10% for medium term. I'll spend that now or invest that now. Some people might say that. You might think about your business expenses. So I think of, you know, if I brought in zero revenue for the next 6 months, can I pay all my employees? Can I pay all my overhead? That might be, if you've got a business or real estate, how you might think of it. Or you might think of any major repairs or maintenance. And maybe add all those together. That's my reserve I want to build. That's how much I want liquid, safe, just in case of the worst scenario. You might do that, might get super analytical about it. But here's my favorite question to ask people. How much do you need to sleep well at night? Ultimately, when it comes down to it, doesn't matter how big or small your reserves are, you got to sleep well at night. And there's this book called The Psychology of Money. I don't agree with everything in the book. The guy's name is Morgan something that wrote it. But he's an investment guy. He loves index funds. And yet he says his number one financial philosophy is he wants to be able to sleep well at night. And anybody who's investing, taking risk, they need to have that ability to still go to bed at night and not be worried about a toilet breaking, or, you know, something like, or that the return is going to crash overnight, or whatever, you know, the lender is going to call in their note, or whatever it might be, right? There's a lot to worry about. But if you have that safe liquid cash reserve, then, and you're sleeping well at night, that's what really matters. Art, we're humans. We need to feel happy and secure. That's like Maslow's hierarchy, right? We're using all these pyramids. We need to feel safe. And then we can go after self-actualization, you know, as we build. But what about liquidity that really grows? Because savings accounts, high-yield savings are looking pretty good right now, right? If you Google high-yield savings, you can find 5.5% in some banks, credit unions. Not too shabby. But who knows how long that's going to last, right? And, we, you know, also, who knows how long those banks are going to last? There's been all kinds of things. So we want liquidity, and we want it to grow, but we still want it safe, right? So how do we do that? Well, somebody said life insurance earlier. I'm a huge fan of this concept called banking yourself. I've been using it personally for 10 years. I've only been introducing it to other people for about 5.5 years, almost 6 now. I wouldn't talk about this if it didn't change my life. If it didn't help me sleep better at night. If you know something better, please tell me about it, because I'll start talking about it instead. If you've never heard about banking yourself before, it's historically grown by better than savings and money market accounts and CDs. It's got a nice growth rate. There, anytime you want to access the money that's in banking yourself type accounts, then you don't need to liquidate or sell anything. Right? No selling your real estate or selling a dividend-paying stock or whatever it is. And you can use your money, and it continues to grow as if you didn't use it, because you're not actually using your money. You're using what's called a general fund at a life insurance company. Yeah, there's those sticky words again, life insurance. This is what you might have heard of as dividend-paying, high cash value, whole life insurance. Some people refer to it as infinite banking. I love to call it bank on yourself, because what the trademark owner, Pamela, did was take infinite banking and codify it and provide accountability for a group of professionals. She was a trainer of financial professionals. When she came across infinite banking, somebody screwed it up when she implemented it, made her policy taxable when she didn't want it to be. And so she's like, well, I know how to train financial professionals. She created the very first training program for life insurance agents to learn how to do infinite banking in a codified, protected way. And she's done really great at protecting her trademark. So I've aligned with her. She's one of my mentors. I love learning from her and from the team that she has. She's the one that introduced me to Tim. So that's a little story about Pamela and the bank on yourself concept. Here's the acronym. It's Friday. This is so appropriate. I use this acronym all the time. The T stands for tax-free. Under current law, life insurance cash values grow without any taxes due, and you can access them without tax penalty. That goes a long way to adding to the income, the safety, the access that you can get from them. G is for guarantees. As long as you're with the right life insurance company, you get a guaranteed increase of your cash value every year. We only work with companies that have paid their guarantees and more, what are called dividends, every single year for over 100 years. That's how strong the guarantees are. So the COVID was not their first pandemic. They actually were paying dividends during the Great Spanish Flu. And if you go back to the Great Depression, 1930, to 40, you know, when we entered World War II, there's no record of any cash value life insurance policy losing money. That's a pretty big deal. And we know people like JCPenney took policy loans to pay their staff to keep JCPenney stores open during that time. So not only did they not lose money, they were able to use it when everything else was not there. Oh, wait, I got to... I is for insurance. It is life insurance. You get a death benefit that protects your loved ones, or that you can accelerate if you get a chronic or terminal illness to help cover medical expenses, pay for a nursing home, take a trip around the world, throw a big party, whatever you want to do. They just give you access to your death benefit in advance, which for the widows I work with is super important for them. They don't want to ever be a burden on their children, specifically their daughters or their daughter-in-laws, who are going to be the ones taking care of them. And so that accelerated death benefit is way more important to them than leaving some kind of big death benefit. And I love to talk about that because I take care of my mom. And so I know what that's like. And I'm glad she has one of these policies. She got it after she had a stroke when she was in her 60s. I always love to tell that because the biggest objection is I'm too old, I'm too sick. Nope. My mom got one. She's given me permission to share this. And we got it for those accelerated death benefits. That if she does need to go into a nursing home, we're not scraping to figure out how. We're not depending on Medicaid. We got the money. We can go use it as we need and give her the best end-of-life care that she needs and deserves. And then F is for financing. You can borrow against your cash value. It still grows as if you didn't touch it. There's no qualifications, like credit check, anything like that. You just say, here's how much money I want, here's the bank account I want you to send it to, here's my signature so you know it's me, or my login so you know it's me. The money is in your bank account within about a week or so. I purchased a property last year. I submitted a loan request on a Wednesday. The money is in my bank account on Monday. And it was like still 2 weeks before closing. I was a little early. I see your hand raised. I love questions. Think of your questions. We've got a microphone. I'm going to keep talking while Ben brings the microphone up. Go ahead. Right here. I have a whole bunch of Q&A at the end, but we'll go ahead and do one now.
Three questions.
Yes.
What is the guarantee rate, mm-hmm. the dividend, annual, and can you overfund this policy?
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm going to start with the third one. Every policy we designed is considered an overfunded life insurance policy. We just stay under the MEC limit, the modified endowment contract limit, so that it stays tax-free unless there's a particular reason to go over that limit. The other two questions, it depends on the company you're with and the type of policy that you have. There are some companies that lowered their guaranteed rate in 2022, so around in there, and it's really low. I don't work at those companies anymore. And there's others that only lowered it a little bit. There was a change that Congress did. I don't have to get into all the technicalities. We work at those companies, so it's still really strong. And then the dividends are kind of complicated. The way that the dividends work in the policies that we have is that you earn a greater and greater amount of dividends every year, and the percentage doesn't matter because the percentage doesn't actually tell you anything. And we can have a much longer conversation of why dividend rates are not the most important thing in a life insurance policy. Okay, write down questions, keep them in mind. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're almost done with my slides, and then we're going to have a lot of fun with Q&A, and I might pull up another slideshow if you guys want to see it. 7 benefits of liquidity, lower interest payments. You know that property I told you about last year that I purchased? I got to haggle with the banks, like real legitimate banks, and I kept saying, well, if I do this down payment, what percentage rate are you going to give me? If I do 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%, because I got the cash. I don't really need your money, but let me negotiate interest rates. And guess what? I got a lower interest rate because I had more money to bring to the deal-making table with those banks. And I worked with a bank that would actually do that kind of thing because I could. I had the power in that relationship. Same with if you're working with private money lenders, right? The more money you put into the deal, the less rate that you can get them to charge you. A cushion for variable income. Any real estate agents in the room? Yes. Variable income, all over the place. I've had a variable income since 2009, and I've been able to fund one of these policies since 2013, and it's literally saved my butt more than I can tell you, including a time when our business was shut down for 3 weeks, our former business that we had. And I didn't have to go groveling to a bank. I didn't have to go into credit card debt. I got to use my own money however I wanted to, replenish it so it's still there when I'm ready to retire. It was still there to put a down payment on a property, right? And it's there for whatever I need, whenever I need it, without any penalty, right? All the things like we talked about. Huge. This is one of my favorite things. I work with a broker for my insurance. Love working with brokers for any kind of home, auto, rental, right? All the insurances. And I get to say, I got plenty of money for a deductible. Give me the best deal. Because the chance of my house burning down is super slim, right? And I can foot the deductible. I'm going to save a ton of insurance premiums in the meantime. It's amazing because I have liquid cash reserves I can tap into whenever and however I need. Now, I don't have that high of a deductible on car insurance because I've got a husband who might have an accident. No, just kidding. I'm the one that has accidents. Not throwing you under the bus. but like, I can still think of, like, what do I want my deductible to be? And not trying to get the lowest deductible because I don't have the cash available. I've got the cash available. Save tons of money every single year as I'm paying those premiums. And I get to pay annually because guess what? I have the liquid cash reserves to pay annually and they give me a discount. Sense of control. This is my biggest one. I'm a little bit of a control freak, if you can't tell. And the idea that I get to have power. I get to be empowered when I'm making deals. I get to have fun with this and be more in control of my financial future. That helps me sleep better at night, right? I'm less worried. I'm more in control. Fuel for your next deals. When a major opportunity comes up, if you've got liquid cash reserves, you get to take advantage of it. Somebody was telling me yesterday, they get the deals nobody else gets because they get to pay cash, right? They don't have to wait 30, 60 days for a private money lender or a bank to approve their financing and set closing. They get to close tomorrow if they wanted. That's the power of having liquid, safe cash reserves. Sure, they can totally be in a life insurance policy. I absolutely recommend it. But you can have that power even if they're in a savings account. Maybe not a CD, because it might be 3 months, 6 months, a year, right? But any kind of liquid, safe cash. Money market. Increased options, right? You get to think of things like, do I want to pay my insurance premiums annual, quarterly, semi-annual, that kind of thing. I love this one. I was putting windows in a home, and they were going to give me a 0% for, you know, so many months. But I said, well, what if I pay cash? Will you give me a discount? You better believe they're going to give me a discount because they have to pay those credit card fees. They have to go through all the paperwork to set up that 0%. I got a 3% discount on windows. That saved me a couple thousand dollars. And guess what? I paid for it with a cash value, life insurance, policy loan, paid myself back on my own terms, didn't have to worry about it. I've done that with so many independent contractors that have worked on homes. So much fun to pay them in cash. They love it, and I get discounts. Lots of other options like that, too. And then the ability to take advantage of opportunities. I shared with you that story of Tim Austin and what he did during the last recession and how he was able to, he hadn't done much real estate between 1980 and 2007, but then to do all of that within those few years made a big difference. And now he loves to call it, he's playing with house money. It's all this money that he made, it's the house money. He's having a heyday now with what he's able to do with that, both for personal fulfillment, but also to keep continuing growing his wealth. He's in his 50s now, right? He's having so much fun. And I think he's spoiling his kids, but whatever. I'm not here to judge him. So I'm going to start asking you some questions as a reflection. I'm a huge fan of questions. Actually, I wrote down all the questions, not all, most of the questions I like to ask in this book called Five Smooth Stones. This is a journal that's full of questions. It's got some information in here too, but it's mostly questions because the reason we call it wealth wisdom is that there's enough knowledge in the world. Wisdom is knowing what the right questions to ask so that you find the right knowledge, you find the right wisdom, you find the right wealth, right? So we can talk more about this if we want to. I was just thinking about questions. So here's my first question. Which one of these seven do you want in your life more right now, as soon as possible? You don't have to say it. Yeah, all of them. That's great. You don't have to say it out loud. Just think of a number. Which one do you want in your life as soon as possible? And guess how you build it? 1% at a time, right? Or if you're already at 10%, make it 11, right? Or take that 10 and say, which is medium, which is short, which is long-term? How do I grow it now to 30? Whatever that looks like. But you start 1% at a time. Now, here's some more questions for you. How much liquidity do you want? Do you know the answer to that question? When do you want it? Why do you want it? And who do you want it for? Sometimes liquidity is not about yourself. I'm a huge fan of exit planning and estate planning. And I think the number one mistake in estate planning is not having enough liquidity for the heirs. And I love talking about how do you make sure there's enough liquidity so that none of the properties you own have to be sold in a down market, None of the syndications are being like waiting, like, I can't, wait, how do we do, you know, get out of this so that we can pay a big tax bill or pay the property taxes and the other, you know, properties we own or whatever it might be, right? Liquidity is one of the most important things in estate planning, and yet it's the most often overlooked. So we could talk about that too. It's also not estate planning for children always, but for widows and widowers. Liquidity is one of the most important things you can leave a loved one that's dependent on you or that you've built a life with. That's kind of heavy. Let me think of a joke. But these are the questions nobody thinks to ask, right? We're thinking, how can I get a better rate of return? Where is my next deal coming from? What's a good market to invest in? Who can I do, you know, who can I build a partnership with to do this or that? But if we ask these questions, we can build strong foundations that allow us to have more control, more power, and sleep better at night when we go and do all those other things. And that's what I want for everybody in this room, that, you know, I got this figured out. Now I can go be invincible in everywhere else. Maybe not invincible, close to invincible. I don't want to overpromise. I am a CFP. I can't do that. So we're going to go into some Q&A. Before we do that, I want to give you a heads up. Thank you all for being here. We have a free book for you. The way that you claim it, actually, while supplies last, we're going to run out. The way that you claim it is to scan this QR code here. You schedule 15 minutes on my calendar or my husband's calendar. You bring the confirmation of that appointment being scheduled back to our vendor booth and show it, and we'll give you the book. Everything that you heard today is chapter 6 in this book. Not everything, most things. It's based on. The chapter is all about liquidity and how important liquidity is. And Pamela wrote this. She's amazing. She's also 72, I think, now, 73. So she's got her style, her language. Mine's very different. Right, I'm 39, just so you know. I look younger, right? It's the makeup. Some people have been having issues scheduling on their phones. You got to scroll down. Just make sure you scroll down all the way so you get all the buttons when you go to schedule. Okay, I'm going to stop talking. I'll leave this up here. Ben's got the microphone. Raise your hand high and proud. I love questions. Oh, we got one in the front row. High achiever up here. Love it.
A late arriver.
Or either one.
Hi, you said that you got 3% off because you paid cash for your windows. What interest rate were you paying for that money?
Yeah, so here's what we did. We have a whiteboard in our basement because I love whiteboarding. And we put the whiteboard, I probably have a picture of it on my phone. We drew a line down the middle. And we said, if we get 0% offer, here's how much we're going to have to pay per month to get the windows paid off before that 0% disappears and then goes high up. And then we took, on this side, if we took a policy loan from our cash value life insurance and got a 3% discount, here's how much we'd have to pay per month until we pay it enough interest on that policy loan that that 3% wasn't worth it, right? And we looked at the monthly amount, and we said, which one fits in our budget? Like, which one actually can we do, and that we, like, it's easy to do. And we found repaying the policy loan faster with that 3% discount was cheaper than trying to pay off the loans before that 0% expired. And that cash flow decision was more important to us than anything.
Does 100% of the interest you pay on that loan go to the insurance company, or does some of it go back into your policy balance?
Yeah, so we work with non-direct recognition companies, which means that when I take a policy loan, the money comes from the general fund. When I repay a policy loan, and the interest that charge goes back into the general fund. But they're mutual life insurance companies. So any increase in the general fund, whether it's my policy loan interest or yours or the bond they gave to Apple to develop the iPad, and the Apple paid back with interest, I'm getting all of that in the form of my guaranteed growth and dividends. And I'm getting the same whether I take a loan or not. So my growth of my policy in that instance was well more than the interest that I paid. So it was good. Yay, another one.
Yes, two questions. First, what was the I in TGIF? And secondly, what are typical interest or dividend rates on the companies that you work with, life insurance companies?
Similar question to that was asked before. The I is for insurance. It is life insurance. You're giving it, you're having protection that way. And it, what I was saying earlier is that the percentage doesn't actually matter when it comes to dividends, and that the guaranteed rate, there are some companies that are lower and some that are higher. We work with the higher ones, and that's actually one of the things you want to be very careful about whenever, if you were to do any kind of high cash value dividend paying whole life insurance, is that you're asking those questions and seeing them custom tailored to you. What you should see is that the dividends that you get and the guarantees increase every single year, no matter what. We got another one. And I want questions not just about life insurance, guys. It's not all I do.
Unfortunately, I'm going back to life insurance.
That's fine.
Is this an IUL or is this whole life?
Oh, whole life. I've not met someone that I thought IUL was a good fit for. And one of my awesome friends, his name is Les, he was friends with the guy that created IUL back in the 1980s. And I would love to tell you that story that he told me. He was the compliance officer at the life insurance company that first decided to offer UL. Very fascinating. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, and then will the rates be variable or fixed?
So the guaranteed increase of the cash value is fixed, and the dividends can change, they can fluctuate. I've seen my dividends be 2 dimes higher than they were projected to me 7 years previously. So they're very predictable. Yay, in the back. We got another one up here in the front when you're done there.
How much do you have to like start one of these?
Oh, yes, one of my favorite questions. We love to aim for $250 per month is what we try to do, because that's when you're actually going to build a cash value that you can do something with, like, you know, pay for windows or buy a car or whatever. I have had a few clients that do less than that. Because they're just living a lifestyle, they're not doing too much, or some policies on kiddos, like if you're insuring a child or a grandchild, can be way less than $250. There's no minimum officially. I got one question up here in the front row, and then I saw somebody in the back too. Thanks, Ben.
Hey.
Hey, I like your shirt.
Thank you. You mentioned that your mom was over 60 and had cancer.
Can
you?
A stroke. Yep.
Stroke. Can you talk about the impact on what it cost and any benefit?
Yeah. So when my mom moved in with us, she sold a home, and she had the equity she'd built in that home after living there for however many years, just sitting in a savings account. And that's what we used to start her a policy with. No more money she ever put into it after that. And what we do is we start with what people have to put in, and we let the death benefit solve for itself. So she got a lower death benefit because of her health, but her cash value was just like if you were to start the same policy, or close enough. In the back.
Okay, so you said that you can borrow against these, and how much does it have to have in cash value before you can borrow against it, and how do you, like, do you purchase a certain amount of cash value, you know, like with a lump sum, or is it by monthly payments?
Both. And technically, you could, if you've got $2 there, you could take a dollar loan, right? There's no, like, amount. And one of the things I want to make sure that you guys know, we work a little differently than most life insurance people do, because we're not just life insurance people. We're comprehensive financial strategy people. And we show everyone a custom, tailored, built, personalized, here's what a policy could look like for you year by year by year by year. We go all the way out to when you're 121 years old if you want. And we do that complimentary, no obligation. So you could see exactly what a policy could look like for you without paying a dime up front. We got a couple questions in the front here. I challenge somebody to come with a not life insurance question.
Sorry, there's another one.
That's fine.
Over time, as the cash value gets built and the dividends get built, can you eventually get it to the point where you are not paying premiums on the policy anymore?
100%. Easy. Some people, they pay one premium and never again. Other times we aim for 7 years at minimum. And other people want to pay till they're 100 years old, and we customize each policy that way. Whatever you want to do.
So say you're set for that $250 a month, and all of a sudden you're coming across some sort of difficulty and you can no longer pay premium. Mm-hmm. And maybe not just for the next couple of months, but a prolonged period of time, but you're still early in your policy. What occurs at that?
Yeah, so this is one of the biggest misconceptions about whole life. We're actually taught in the CFP books that whole life premiums are not flexible. They're the same every month, and you have to pay them. Well, the way we design these policies, they have something called a paid-up additions rider on them, and that makes the premium flexible. So I'm thinking of a client that has a policy. They're doing $250 a month. They can go down to $125 a month, or if they have enough cash value, they could use the cash value to pay that $125 and temporarily stop payments. There's tons of flexibility there. One of my very good friends was one of my first clients, and they were paying their premiums with overtime. Chicago police officer was getting tons of overtime, but then the department said, okay, no more overtime. They're able to temporarily stop payments until they figured out how are we going to pay this again. And it was one of the best gifts that I was able to give them. It's like, hey, you don't have to worry about this. It's good. And I would be very scared if I had done something wrong to him. Right, detective. We got one over here.
So it's along the lines of that $250 a month. Realistically, if you wanted to build something to have $100,000 available cash for acquiring properties or what have you, what's the real out-of-pocket money that you have to put up and for how long in order to make that available to you?
I mean, it depends. Like, if you wanted $100,000 tomorrow, you could put in $120,000 today. $120,000, and you have $100,000 tomorrow. Could be a little more, a little less, depending on age, health. You look young, you probably maybe do less than $100,000. So we have access to some proprietary products that only Bank and Yourself professionals get. So you're not going to see this with every policy. I'm talking about this one in particular. Personally, I have Brandon, can I share about your policy? Okay. So we've had a policy we started 10 years ago when we were in our first business. We were living on $1 to $2 an hour in the business, making scraps. But we committed. We're like, we need to be financially responsible. So we started putting in $400 a month. We paid off our student debt with a policy loan. We bought our home with a policy loan. We've done so many different things. Last month, Brandon paid off all his policy loans, and we have $100,000 in cash value now. 50 in his, 50 in mine. We've done the same thing. Yeah. We got over here, sorry.
Okay, so my question is kind of twofold. First, it has to do if you, let's say you open the policy on your children, you have two kids, what would be the advantage of putting it in their name versus your own, and would you still have access to that cash if it's in their names?
Yeah, okay, so there's the holy triangle of life insurance. I'm gonna use a faith metaphor. Every life insurance policy has three parties to it: the owner, the insured, and the beneficiary. So you could be the owner of a policy, and a juvenile or an adult child could be the insured on the policy. They do the medical exam. And as the owner, you control who the beneficiary is. So you could be the beneficiary too. And then you fund all the premiums. You get to use the cash value how and when you want to. Something happens to your child, God forbid, you get the death benefit. And then if you want to, you can transfer the ownership to your child. And now they've got one of the best gifts that a parent can give their child, which is uninterrupted compound interest for the rest of their lives. Did I answer your question? Oh, and why would you do that? So one is the gift that you give them. Sometimes us parents, we're uninsurable. So it's a great way to be able to use this concept if you're not able to get life insurance on yourself. And then also it could be you've got plenty of life insurance you can't get anymore. You can open policies on any kind of insurable interest, including children. And saving for college is good too. Or saving for their first home purchased, those kind of things. We got another one in the back.
Yes, I would like to know how you guys make money exactly. And the second one is, when we borrow money from something that we've bought, how do you know what the interest rate on that's going to be so we can determine what's happening?
Yeah, great. Okay. Oh, I need to step back. I think I got some feedback there. Okay. I make money through, I would say, if I look back at the past year, probably 99% of the revenue we've had in our business has come from commissions on life insurance and annuities. We love fixed index annuities. We do a ton of those, too. And that's probably 99% of our revenue. It's just commissions we've gotten from people that have said yes to working with us. And then the other 1% have come from fees, from people that want more in-depth coaching, or we have a membership program online. We have some books we created, right? We did a Kickstarter. I made some money off of doing the Kickstarter and getting these created for us. And we'll probably see over time that percentage stay about the same, although maybe we'll do more fee-based stuff too. But thankfully, I don't get any asset under management fees. That wouldn't help me sleep well at night. The other question, the percentage charged on the policy loan. It's a simple interest rate. So if you want to compare it apples to apples to an APR, like on a mortgage or a credit card, it's more like a 3.1% APR. And here's the great thing. We've seen interest rates go up, right? If you've got a HELOC, you might have been paying 3-4%. You might be paying 8-9%. You're doing a DSCR loan. Those are now 8-9%. Policy loans, we saw go from 5 at some companies up to 5.35, and they're already back down to 5. Simple interest. So that's like going from 3 to 3.1 APR and back down to 3. They can't actually change the loan interest on policy loans by more than a part of a percentage point per year. It depends on what state they're in, what part of a percentage point. But they can't jump up to 8 to 10%, that kind of thing. And at least in my contract with the companies that I work with, it says right there in the contract, the minimum is 5% simple interest. The max is 8% simple interest. So if they were going to change it, they can't go above 8, which is amazing. Like that's 3 to like 5% or less APR. That's a beautiful thing that I have access to money like that for my entire life. And it's still growing while I access it. We got another question in the back, and then I see a hand there in the front.
So I have a policy.
Yay!
$100,000 every year.
Oh, you're saying hypothetically. Okay.
Well.
Sorry.
No, I do. But so my question is, I do a lot of private lending. I know that I could take $100,000 and lend it out and get 10% all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And I could put that in a spreadsheet and say $100,000. At the end of the year, it's going to be worth $110,000. But when I look at my illustration, if I run it through my policy first, because all the insurance people say, run it through your policy first, and your money is working in two places at the same time. But when I run it through my policy first, the very first year.
Cost of insurance.
I'm limited. So I put $100,000 in, but I can only take out $75,000, say, the first year.
Yep.
So now I already, in my head, I don't know what this pencils out on paper, but in my head, I lost $25,000 in cash value. And now I can only borrow $75,000 to lend out at 10%. So instead of making $10,000, now I only made $7,500.
Yep.
Plus I had to pay interest on that.
Yep.
So I'm really only making half of that because I paid 5% to the insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following year I put in another $100,000, and maybe this year I could take out $80,000.
Yep.
So as the years progress, I get it. But it seems like in every illustration I've seen, I'm 5, 6, 7 years before my policy, which is
breaks
supposedly
even. Yep.
Unending compound interest, but it's taken me 6 or 7 years just to break even, so I'm not seeing the compound interest there. Plus, I'm seeing that the capital that I had to borrow, I had to pay interest on, and it's less than what I would have if I just lent it out at 10%.
Yep.
And I can't find anybody to explain that to me.
Yep.
To make it make sense.
Okay, I've got a quick story for you. Okay.
I'm all ears.
I'm going to tell you about John and Dan. I met John and Dan are both real estate investors. I met them both about the same time. They're both about the same age. Very eerie how much their backgrounds were similar. They both had two kids, you know, all the things. And I showed them both very similar policies because they were so similar and they wanted, you know, put in money, take money out. And Dan decided not to proceed and John did. And it was because Dan wanted to have 100% of his money available to go and invest as much as he can. He wasn't concerned about safe liquid cash reserves. He was going to use the profit from the investments to start bank on yourself policies, right? And so he was going to wait a couple years till some of those loans started, you know, generating enough income to actually start a premium. John was like, I've got some extra money I'm not actually planning to use right now. I want to build my long-term future. He was looking out 30 years, and he said, this is worth it to give up $10,000 now to be able to double my money every year in 20 years, right? If I put in $100,000 then, I've got $200,000. That's worth it to me, and he made that choice. I love both those guys. I support both the decisions that they made, and I loved that I got the chance to help them make that good decision. So that's what you're looking for, not somebody to sell you a product, but to help you, somebody to say, when is the right time and in the right way? Is it to do one of these? That's what we do at Wealth Wisdom Financial. So I agree with you. It's not the right time for everybody. And if you want to put all your money into investments right now, go do that. I will support you in doing that. And as you have money, let's build that safe reserve. And if you want to do that in savings, in something else, like, we can talk about that too.
So I want to do the policy because from what I understand, it if I run my money through the policy in the long run,
right, think long range,
it will outgrow and I'll be way better off. But the illustration that I receive, and I've received tons of them, none of them show me that. They don't show me, okay, my cash value is way so much better, or maybe they do in 100 years when I'm on my deathbed. But it's taking me, like I said, 6 years just to break even inside, and it seems like I'm losing money in the beginning.
I'll let the genius over here answer that one. And everybody, Brandon, my husband.
Hey, if you didn't introduce me, sorry, I didn't get. So I think about this from a business ownership point of view. What I love about the contract and the policy, who here has started a business? Did you make your money when you started the business? Like, was it in the black in the first year, or did it cost you? Anybody did it? It usually it cost, right? And then the second year, it starts getting a little better. And the third year, you either close the business or you say, this isn't working, we need to move, or we change, right? So I think about it like a business model. What I like about life insurance is it's not an investment, it's a savings vehicle, it is life insurance, and it's tax-free. So begin with the end in mind. I don't know if you have a spouse or anything like that. If you got hit by a bus before, you know, that death benefit is huge, right? So that is huge, and it's tax-free, right? So sometimes there's a cost for that peace of mind and that Amanda shared about. That we're chasing rate of return, but there's a cost to not doing something. And unfortunately, this is the sad part. We deal with a lot of, how do I say this? Widows.
And widowers.
And widowers that they did not protect their wife, and we're having to figure it out. So it's a good rate of return. It's not all about the rate of return. Right.
And about having 100% of your money 100%. Right away.
Some of it is about what am I going to do and tax-free for your heirs. Because even with money that you have in the market or any of that, taxes are going to come after your family. And how do we have liquidity for them tax-free and that death benefit? And that's bigger than just how can I flip it and do as much as I can. But I know it's a business model. That's the main thing, right? And I can prove its success. Make sense?
Yeah. We got one in the back and then one in the front. And I'm supposed to be done at 1:30, but if you guys are having fun and nobody's kicking us out, we can continue. But also, if you already scheduled your call, you're like, I'm good, I won't be offended if people start leaving and go into our booth to get your book. So just make sure you're not talking and making noise so that people that want to still ask questions can hear.
If you have a current life insurance policy, can you switch into this?
Yes, maybe. So let's say you have a improperly designed whole life insurance policy, or you have a universal life and you're like, oh, this wasn't what I thought it was. You might be familiar with a 1031 exchange in real estate. There's a thing called a 1035 exchange in life insurance. Yeah.
Okay, I use private lenders a lot. This kind of hitchhikes off of his the previous guy's asking the question he asked. We borrow and pay back hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on different projects. Is this a vehicle that we should have the money deposited into this product, and then we take the money out as draws as we need it? Because the private lenders I've worked with for years, they will generally give me all the capital.
Right.
I mean, I might have $300,000-$400,000 shit in the account, and it's sitting there for 6 to 8 months, literally making 0% interest. Is this something that would be a vehicle for that could help us accelerate the cash?
I'd love to prospect. Help you think that through. I think there's a lot of moving parts that we need to talk about, pros and cons to both ways, and think through, and you make the decision. I just help you think it through. I'll tell you, one person I know that did that, his private money lender loved that he had a death benefit then, that if he got hit by a bus, and he was in RAL, residential assisted living.
We do shared living too, ourselves.
If he got hit by a bus, that death benefit came, and the lender would still get their money back. And that the lender loved that and actually got him more favorable terms.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yay, nobody got a non-life insurance question in. Man. Yes. Long-term care? Yeah, what about it? Yeah.
And one of the strategies could be applied to long-term care. And the reason I'm asking is, if the statistics right, and I'm not sure that people go into long-term care,